This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
Ownership is the key. A lot of us are renting our careers. We're renting our lives. Real estate agents think that they own their business. If you cannot walk away from your business for a day, a week, a month, or a year, the business owns you.
Hey friends, welcome back to the Color of Money podcast. My name is Julia Lachey and I am with my co-host today, Daniel Dixon. Guess what somebody told me, Daniel? Somebody was like, I really like when it's you and Daniel. And I was like,
oh, really?
What? Where? No offense to Unc or Bo. We cannot do it without Unc and Bo. And they like our duo, Daniel. But it's not just me and Daniel today. We have a fantastic guest. I was going to try to figure out how exactly to introduce the guest, but I'm going to call her an entrepreneur extraordinaire. My friend Fee Gentry is joining us today, and she's going to talk to us about a number of things. Fee, I'm going to let you introduce yourself because you are the CEO of this, the CEO of that, the president of this, you doing this, you doing that. She literally is a real estate business entrepreneur extraordinaire. But can you tell us a little bit about, and please don't be shy. That's not what this is. This is not a podcast where you be modest. People need to know what it is you do, who you are. I know Fee from when Fee was leading the diversity efforts at EXP. Of course, I'm head of inclusion and belonging for KW, and Fee was that for EXP at one time, and so many other things. So tell us, please, Fee, welcome. Who are you?
Thank you. Like I said, I'm just Felicia. Like, my government name is Felicia Gentry, but obviously my stage name is Fee Gentry. I grew up on the Monterey Peninsula in California in the Bay Area. So that's what I say, go 49ers. That's why, yes, me and Daniel connected right there. But by heart, I am an entrepreneur. So I've created or co-founded 9 different companies in 7 different industries, everything from the health and wellness industries. But for the last 2 decades, so 20 years, I've been in the real estate space. So I've been a licensed agent. You know, I've led a team. I've been a team leader. I've done all those things. I was with Big Red with Keller Williams for 12 years of my career, right? So what I do now is I'm a business consultant for the real estate industry. So that's what I do. So I do consulting for equity, and I'm also doing mergers and acquisitions. So that's what I'm doing now. And then I'm also a strategy officer for a new startup real estate marketplace that is going to be coming online pretty soon that you guys will hear about.
Okay, good. See, I told you there's no way I could have remembered all of those things. But you mentioned something, and I thought it would be an excellent topic for today. A lot of times we have people on and we just kind of talk in general about building wealth, and we talk about leadership in general. But we haven't, not in a few episodes, at least several episodes, talked about actual strategy. We talk about wealth building. We talk about getting more money. We haven't really talked about strategy, but that's actually what you are. You are a strategist. You are a business strategist. So today I was hoping that you could talk to us about literally what are some of the strategies specifically. Like you said, you've owned several businesses. How do we buy and sell businesses and business opportunities?
Sure. Let me go back and start by saying, first of all, thank you all for having me on the show. I didn't even say that. So thank you for having me on the show.
thank you for being here.
Yeah. But for, in terms of what we've been trained, whether it's in our childhood, our schooling, education, it's always been about either working for somebody else or creating your own businesses. But what we haven't seen is, or have people talk to us, is about buying businesses, right? And so everybody keeps saying, build a business, right? But the way that the most wealthy top less than 1%, if you think of all of them, they have bought businesses. That's how they've created their wealth. If you look at Tesla, even though they've created certain things, they bought businesses. If you look at Amazon, they have bought businesses. If you look at Warren Buffett, what has he done? He has purchased businesses. So it's just like what we do. So it's a transfer of skills. And that transfer of skill is looking at assets, like asset, which that's what I love about buying businesses. Guess what? They've already been in business for a long period of time. And I'll talk to you all a little bit about criteria. We'll talk about criteria later on, but they've been in business, right? So they've got a proven track record. They're historical. They're time tested. They have profit. They've got a brand. They've got all those things in place. They're assets that are ready to go. And all they're waiting for is for people like us, especially those of us in the real estate industry, to go and buy them. Because guess what we do? We go find them. So we're already in the real estate industry. We already know how to find off-market deals. We already know how to procure and bring them to us. We already know how to have conversations and negotiate these business deals. We're already comfortable with that. And then we also know how to like consult and negotiate and look at the contracts, right? And then we also have a team of people around us that help us procure and buy those businesses. And you could do them a lot of times with little to no money out of pocket, or we have lending institutions that will help us acquire these assets.
It's such a fascinating conversation because we have so many people that own small businesses that are working on the exit. I think the average age is something like 67 or something like that, that are exiting. And so it's an area that a lot of people don't have very much experience or knowledge with. How do you find it? How do you sell or finance it? How do you buy something like that with zero money down? I think for a lot of us real estate people, we're operators and we're taking those systems and those tools of operating our businesses. KPIs are KPIs across every industry. Now, Fee, tell me a little bit about how do you evaluate an opportunity? You find the HVAC company that wants to potentially sell. How do you look at this? I've heard EBITDA is not a real thing and you should never pay attention to it, right? How do you look at this and analyze it?
So there's different ways. First, you have to be very clear about what you're buying. So it's called your buy box, your buying criteria, right? So my deal box, for example, and it depends on what you're buying. And so I'll talk to you more about what you're buying, but my buying criteria is like, I'm looking for assets, whether it's an online asset, I'm looking for something like that has $250,000 a year minimum cash flow. So if I'm looking to buy an online Facebook group, for example, or a meetup group, I'm looking for $250,000 a year minimum. I want them to have been in business for at least 5 years, and I want that group to have at least 50,000 members. So that's what I'm looking for, right? So,
I'm going to stop you off top because I know for some people, they heard you say, buy a Facebook
group. I was thinking the same thing.
So keep going, but I want to make sure you circle back to that. Keep going.
Yeah. So that's my deal box for an online asset. But again, being clear about my assets. And then for offline, like maybe a bricks and mortar, like, so let's say Daniel's identity of like a HVAC company, which is interesting that I'm in the business. I'm literally negotiating an HVAC company right now. Owners, right? So I'm looking for these D's, right? Distressed, disease, divorced, something like that. But they've been in business for 20 something years. They're in their late 50s and they're burnt out and they're tired and they have a son and a daughter. Guess what? Sons and daughters, they want to be YouTube stars. They don't want to be working in an HVAC business. They want to be, you know, influencers and all that stuff. So the criteria that I'm very clear about is I'm also looking for a certain specific profit margin. And that profit margin has to cover four things. So I'll talk to you more about that, Daniel. So it needs to cover one, it needs to cover the expenses of the business. Number two, it needs to cover the growth of the business. Number three, it needs to cover debt service. And number four covers my compensation as an owner. I'm not buying a business because I love it. I'm buying it because what we wanted, cash flow. So those are the four things I'm looking for when I'm buying businesses. The other part about that is then, like we talked about EBITDA. So EBITDA is usually for businesses that are, and that's, and for those who don't know what that means, it means earnings before interest, taxes, and appreciation. So those are the things. So that's a tax term. And those are for professionally run companies. I'm looking at companies that are offline between $1 to $5 million in earnings for the bricks and mortar type of company. So if you think about a title company or a mortgage company, or like we talked about, an HVAC company, because guess what? Private equity firms aren't looking at those companies. And that's about 60%. So there's 20 million businesses a year that are out there for sale. Guess how many of them sell? Less than 20% of those businesses sell. So going back to like what we talked about with the HVAC company, I'm looking at the ownership and how it's structured. So most small businesses are not run by EBITDA. They're run what's called by SDE, which is seller's discretionary earnings. And that is how you evaluate the company. So if it's owner operated, so if it's mom and pop business and maybe they have like 1 to 5 employees, then you kind of, there's a SDE chart that you can go and look, but let's say industry standard. And for each industry, so for HVAC or any trades associations, that might be like 1 to 3x, right, earnings. But if it was professionally run, or professionally operated, that's where the EBITDA comes from. That might be like a 5x, 10x, 12x, right? If it's a professionally run company. So that's how you separate the difference. So yeah, that's what you mean. Like small businesses, yeah, you don't really follow EBITDA that much.
Are you searching these on BizBuySell? Are you sourcing them through your network? Like, how do you find these opportunities?
All the above. I don't particularly care to work through BizBuySell because sometimes the brokers get involved and they mess up a deal. Again, you can do mail outs, you can get lists. I like to do events. That's my jam. So I'm doing seller events. And so I'm running ads. And then I'm also just using real estate professionals. I'm like, hey, if you're a commercial real estate broker or a real estate agent, what do? They know business owners, right? So I just use my professional network. That's it. And again, like the same thing, I'm also going into groups. So I belong to probably like 300 or 400 groups.
There's so many things you said that there are a few things. One thing about people who are really good at what they do, they know exactly what they do, exactly how they do it, exactly what the metrics are, exactly what the, you know, and I think that for many of us, myself included, who are just all over the place, we're not clear on exactly what we do, exactly how we do it, exactly what the metrics are, exactly what the, but you just said that like so, like off the top of your head, here's what I do. You ran a whole class in 5 minutes. And then you said, this is the part that made me giggle. You said, yep. Like it's just all you. So you do this. Yep. Like, that's it.
And it, well, she's a professional. This is her niche.
She knows what she's talking about. And I think that's fascinating. I do want to circle back to this whole Facebook group thing. What in the heck are you talking about buying Facebook groups? What does that mean?
What's the number one thing that people want is an audience, right? So if you, I mean, you need traffic and clients. And so again, all that is just a digital asset. So think about whether you're at a room, like if we're at any live event, you need an audience, right? You need butts in seats to buy your products and services, right? And so one of the easiest assets to buy are these online assets. So it's a Facebook group. It could be a meetup group. It could be associations, like online associations. It could be a school. It could be a YouTube channel, an Instagram channel. All those are digital assets. No difference, not that really big a difference than an actual real brick and mortar business. And so if you have the audience, because remember this, he who controls the audience and is speaking in front of the audience has control of that group. Like y'all, there's this lady who has a Facebook group that has 500,000 first-time home buyers. Now I'm not selling real estate, right? But she's not monetizing. She has 500,000 first-time home buyers. It's a 5,000 member first-time home buyers page. Can you imagine what to do with that kind of group? So one, they onboard, right? So now you have their email, right? Because you can take them off the platform because that's where the money is. You take them off the platform, you get their email. Then you start creating newsletters and content for not only the first-time homebuyers, but then you have agents who are probably lingering on there. And then you create a referral network or an advertising opportunity. Oh, and you're also getting paid by YouTube or whatever channel that you switch those people onto, Instagram. That's the opportunity.
It's so fascinating. It's so cool.
I'm fascinated by just how well you know your craft, you know, and how easy it is for you to speak about it. Because honestly, we could have real estate agents on here and they couldn't speak that clearly about how they sell a house, you know. And so it's very fascinating, a number of things. I kind of want to talk a little bit about you. So obviously you own several businesses. That's kind of your thing. How do you look at business ownership in the whole scope of wealth building?
I think we have to be a nation of owners. Ownership is the key. A lot of us are renting our careers. We're renting our lives. Real estate agents think that they own their business. If you cannot walk away from your business for a day, a week, a month, or a year, the business owns you. And I was guilty of that. Like y'all, like I said, I've learned it from earning several different companies, and that's what struck me. And this is after, you know, this is just 2 years ago. So I'm only just a few years ago, but that's what I realized. And so ownership is the key to freedom, all that freedom and security and cash flow that we're talking about. It's the ownership piece of it. And so if you don't have that pillar of ownership where the business is making money while you sleep, you are self-employed.
Yeah.
How do I take myself out of being self-employed and into business owner mode? What would be the first thing that I would need to do to say, you know what you just said, Fee, that's me. I am self-employed. I don't own a business. My business does own me. What's the first step to get out of that cycle and move into true business ownership?
Mindset and decision, making a decision. That's it. The first thing is changing your mind and saying, I no longer want to be self-employed. I am a business owner because business ownership means freedom. And if you can get very clear about your criteria, that's the very first step. The second step after that is like we talked about saying, what is it that I want to do? What are my skills, desires, passions, and energy, like in my time that I can invest in going after business ownership? It's just being very clear about that. And then establishing a criteria, that deal box, that criteria. That's what I had to become very clear about.
What was your first business that you bought? I'm sure you were nervous and didn't know all the details. I mean, right now you're operating at a high level, but let's go back to the first business. How did it come about and how did you get there to get that mindset to the point of, oh, wow, I'm doing this wrong. I got to start owning and becoming a business owner and getting out of working for my business.
It started around real estate. Been in the business for 20 years and we'll go back and do this exercise, but it was my landscaper. It was like helping my landscaper, and it was a partnership. David, his name is David. And I said, David, I was in a brand new home construction community. And he was like, hey, could you refer me more business and all that? And I said, well, dude, I got to pay you like PayPal. You don't really have a bank account, all this stuff, you know? And I said, would you like some help with your business? And he was like, yeah. So I just start that consulting for equity piece of it. And so I start saying, if I can help you, and I said, you're making, like, he was making X dollars a month. And I said, if I can help you make, you know, X more dollars, XYZ dollars a month money, would you be willing to give me some equity or partnership in the business? And he said, yes. That's how it started. And then the first project test was really, because we talked about this in November. It was during Christmas. I helped him make an additional $60,000 hanging Christmas lights.
Wow.
And so I took 20% of that. And I was like, oh, this is cool. All I did was help him figure out how to get contracts to hang Christmas lights with his existing clients and customers. And I was hooked after that. That's the very first business deal that I did.
It's truly this concept of coming from a place of contribution. You didn't go saying, how much money can I make with this opportunity? You were like, hey, if I could help you, like, would you be open to that? And then learn the craft through that. I love that.
That sounds like it was a consulting opportunity, or did you actually buy into the business?
No dollars and cents. Every single deal that I've done so far has been with little or no money out of pocket. That's the piece, right? Is little to no money out of pocket. And I've already sold one of them already. So I also got a vending business, because all I care about is cash flow, right? Was a vending, crunch time vending. And it was machines. So I invested a little bit to get some machines, but these vending machines were located in Home Depots, 44 machines. So again, that joint venture. So it's little to no money out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit HomeTeam.com to learn more.
Now, you said you were going to walk us through an exercise.
Yeah, I want to walk you through an exercise so that people can get an idea of where they are in the circle. And I'm going to kind of do this here. I don't know.
If you're driving, I think you should pull over, pull out a pen and a pad. I see Daniel over here writing notes feverishly. You're going to have to share your notes with me. Yeah, you're going to have to share these notes with me, Daniel.
Yeah, but
if you're driving, stop what you're doing. She's about to give us some knowledge. Okay. All right.
Right.
Exercise.
So this part, draw a circle. I want y'all to draw a circle wherever you are. Put yourself, especially because I'm assuming mostly everybody is a real estate professional, real estate agent, right? So put your name in the middle. So if you put your name in the middle out of a transaction, in a real estate transaction, we're going to start writing down. I wish we had some Jeopardy music when they come back and edit this, to play some Jeopardy music and say, I want to give you all like 30 seconds and I'm going to help you all 30 seconds to come out with how many people get paid on a real estate transaction. Ready? Go. I want y'all to start writing down. So we'll just talk it out. You and I will talk it out. Who gets paid? Title company gets paid, right?
Wait. We're giving them 30 seconds, right?
Okay, yeah, give them 30 seconds.
They'll do it. Yeah. we got 10 more seconds in your 30 seconds.
Yep.
It's a timed activity. Yeah.
It is a timed activity. So write this down. How many people get paid? And just write down as many as you can. Just keep that pen to paper. Keep going or type in whatever it is that you're doing. Like, how many people get paid?
That was 30 seconds.
Okay. So what do you think people came up with? Like, let's go with some of the top ones that people get. How many people get paid on a transaction? Let's start naming them.
Mortgage, title.
Yep.
Mortgage, title, real estate, home warranty,
yep.
Inspector, appraiser.
Yep.
Insurance.
Yep. Keep going, y'all. Utilities.
Utilities,
videographers. Movers, interior designers, landscapers, home organization people, security, roofing, HVAC, home automation, you know, handyman. And so on average, there are about 51 different people can get paid off. Of course, the government and the banks and our brokers and all that stuff, but about 51 people can get paid off of a real estate transaction. How many did you get paid off of as a real estate professional?
We did this activity at an event. Mm-hmm. Speaking of events, you said I like to do events. You invited me to an event that you did. And we did this activity at the event. So I already knew in advance. I cheated a little bit. But I remember in the room that I was in, I think the most someone came up with in that 30 seconds was 63. Someone came up with 63 people that get paid from one transaction, right?
Yep. So up to 63 people, like I always just say about 40, on average, about 40-something people can get paid. But 60-something people get paid off of one real estate transaction. And I'm asking you as the real estate professional, how many times have you gotten paid? And mostly some people, if they're good, they'll go, oh, I got paid off of, you know, I'm an investor, I'm a property manager, or if they're a videographer or something like that, or house clean, you know, like I've met this couple who clean houses. So they're already in your circle. So there's three ways that you can get paid off of a transaction. You can do a collaboration, right? You could do like a collaboration and get revenue share off of it. That's one way. Number two, you can do a joint venture, like we talked about, that consulting for equity piece of it. And the third one is just an acquisition. I mean, how many real estate teams and brokerages do not own? And we got big, like Keller Williams and these big firms, they got big teams that don't own their own mortgage company. They don't own a title company. They don't own a property management company, or like we talked about, a moving company, or all these things. You can buy those assets right now. There is somebody who is tired in your circle. You can pick up your phone right now. And we already know there is a tired handyman construction company. There is a tired landscaping company, or a company that wants to grow but doesn't know how, that you can partner with and either acquire their business, do a joint venture collaboration, or with little to no money out of pocket.
So talk to me, Fee, about time then, time spent in all of these different things, because, you know, sometimes people say, well, I've just got to focus on one thing in order to be successful at it. How do you focus on all these different businesses that you run and still do them effectively and still be sane? Because you sound very calm to me. I feel like you should sound, you know, like right. Your hair is on fire. Right. How do you manage the time of running these and owning these businesses?
Because you're not buying a job. You're buying a business. Think about that. You don't see Warren Buffett, who owns hundreds of thousands of companies. You don't see Elon Musk or Oprah. They're not running because you put operate. We're not, again, that's coming from an operator mindset, not an owner mindset. Mm-hmm. Operation mindset is totally different than an ownership mindset. And I don't believe in the word of time management. I believe that you have to manage yourself and your priorities and putting people in place to do the work. So what we're buying, when we're buying businesses or joint ventures, you're buying their brand. You're buying their history, you're buying their cash flow, you're buying their operations and systems. If they're well functioning businesses. So what you're providing to them is your intellectual capital, and you're providing to them, like I said, sometimes I might be helping with marketing or branding or sales or just helping them with systems. And so ownership mindset versus an operator mindset. That's it. And so you could do all this stuff without selling more houses, without building a traditional real estate team and all that stuff, because you already have operators in place.
What does accountability look like in these business lines? Are you meeting with these people and holding accountable metrics?
So with my team, because I've done like business consulting on it, it's metrics, right? Like we talked about this key performance. And we, matter of fact, me and Jose were just talking about this morning. It's what you measure that matters, right? And so we don't care what your key performance indicators. It could be sales. It could be how many contacts that you've met. And then most of all, cash collected, right? Like, what's bottom line? What's your cash collected every day? That's the simplest metric, is like cash collected versus how much money that you're spending out. Those are very basic metrics. And if you put those in a dashboard where people can see them and hold them accountable to that every day, you know, so I meet with David, or a meeting with Tony and his wife, or, you know, like, it just depends on who it is, but they all are very clear about, this is the assignment. I do my job and they do theirs.
What's your best business? What do you enjoy the most?
Right now, I'm like in this real estate marketplace that I'm part of. I love it. Like, that piece is fun.
Tell us about that. What is that?
I can't talk about it publicly yet.
Okay.
It's a real estate marketplace. So think about a Carfax for your home. Or think about an Amazon marketplace where you can go get home services on a place like home services.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, yeah. And again, that was through a relationship. I get paid per month, and then I have some ownership equity in the company.
Now, I know somebody's listening to you like, man, I love her. I've got to hear more of this lady. You actually do have a podcast where you share some of this information. Tell us about your podcast.
Yeah. So it is a podcast called Roots and Riches, and I co-host with myself and Jose Aviles. And so it's, you know, me and a millennial Latino guy, and he's a master marketer. I mean, he markets with some of the biggest names in marketing. And so we talk about cultural influence in business. And so that's really what we talk about is, you know, looking at the underrepresented, unseen, underserved women, men, et cetera, in the industry. And so we talk a lot about these things, about business acquisitions. Like, my pet peeve right now is, like, these people keep talking about scaling a business. Well, we don't even have the basics right. Right. Like, because I meet with so many business owners, and y'all, most of these business owners are a wreck. They don't have their sales organizations, sales processes. They don't have their outreach campaigns. And then we won't even talk about technology. I mean, so like just layering it with technology. I mean, it's been crazy. I mean, that part is crazy. So that's what we talk about. And so we talk about, like, how, you know, how do you stay rooted in your tradition, you know, in the roots that you grew up with, right? And get rich. So that's what we talk about.
How do you stay connected with the roots that you grow up in and get rich? That sounds like that's a whole episode all in itself, right?
I mean,
this is called the Color of Money podcast. Obviously, we share similar audiences, but how do you stay rooted in the roots you grow up with and still become wealthy?
Because you see it as a superpower so many times. Remember when I was in the D&I space, one of the things that I really was frustrated about D&I was that everybody was talking about our differences. And I said, no, it's our differences that is our superpower, and it's our strength and how we leverage that. And so whether you speak a different language, that's a superpower. If you're Black and grew up in the hood, that is a superpower because you've learned some skills. Whether you're a young millennial or a Gen Z, that is a superpower because there is somebody who has your voice, your audience that you can always speak to. And so how you use it to become wealthy is you use it as two things. You see it as somebody that you can lead and be a leader, and that somebody can aspire and learn, you know, learn from you. Or you can use it as, like, if you've had bad experiences or negative experiences, to learn from that as well, because nothing is wasted. Everything's a lesson in life. Nothing is wasted. And so you use your cultural roots, because everybody has these rich cultural roots. Wherever you come from, however you come from, we all have these rich cultural roots that you can dig deep into those things and draw strength from your ancestors or the languages or the culture, the food, whatever it is, and grow a business. And when I talk about being rich, rich is not just monetarily rich. We're talking about rich with resources, rich in relationships, rich with self-love.
We were talking about, you know, who are our upcoming guests going to be. And I said, oh, let's have Fee. And I didn't know what we were going to talk about today, Fee. I was just like, let's just bring Fee. She'll talk about something, you know.
Right.
And I am so glad we did. I'm embarrassed that we took so long to have you on the podcast. You are a wealth of knowledge, obviously, right? Wonderful, beautiful spirit, wealth of knowledge. And certainly you've got so much to offer that we'll definitely have to have you come back again. And I know Imric and Bo are going to be disappointed that they missed you, because you've got a lot of value to add. I guess I would say, what is one thing that you would want this particular audience to leave this conversation with?
I always, and with this particular conversation, I want people to make the decision to become owners. That's the number one thing that I really want. Make the decision, because it's really, you know, it's simple, but it's not easy. But once you make the decision that you want to own your own business, because that's where the freedom is. We keep saying that I'm here to leave a legacy and I want to do all these things. Make the decision to become an owner. Let's move from the operator mindset to the ownership mindset. That's my one thing that I want to leave with this audience.
And with that, the doors of the church are open. Is there one?
Is there one?
Is there one?
Yeah.
Is there one? I would like to be one, Fee. I've made the decision. I am a business owner. That was wonderful. You are wonderful. Daniel, anything else we should ask Fee before we let her go?
One question. How do you protect yourself in these partnerships? Are you really tight with operating agreements and roles and specific duties and things like that?
That is correct. I've paid thousands of dollars. So I've been trained by peers who operate in the mergers and acquisition space. And so I have access to lawyers who look over every single thing. And the other thing is, we set up what's called an SVP, which is a special purpose vehicle that protects you, that keeps a shield of protection away from you when you're doing these deals. And a lot of times, just keep them simple. Like, and he who controls the terms and conditions controls the contract.
Right. Strength through partnership. I love it.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Fee. We will definitely have you back for another episode. And thank you all for tuning in to the Color of Money podcast. We'll catch y'all next time. Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.